I'm Aaron Schachter, in for Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. The ink is still wet on the nuclear deal that President Obama brokered with Iran, but the art of the sell is underway. The president answered questions from reporters today, and here's The World's Matthew Bell with an update.
If this hard-fought agreement is ever going to be implemented, President Obama will need to get the deal through Congress. Skeptical lawmakers have lots of concerns. One of them is about how the inspections at Iranian nuclear sites would work. Will United Nations inspectors have the freedom to go where they want, when they want, in order to verify that Iran is indeed living up to its side of the bargain? President Obama says he is confident.
This is the most vigorous inspection and verification regime by far that has ever been negotiated.
Obama said Iran might very well try to cheat, but he maintained that inspectors would be watching the whole Iranian nuclear supply chain, from mines to production facilities, and that would give them the ability to discover any violations in time to deal with them. The president said the agreement has a built-in one-year breakout time. That means Iran would be 12 months away from being able to build a nuclear bomb, and it would give the international community sufficient time to respond, if necessary, by reimposing economic sanctions.
And so really the only argument you can make against the verification and inspection mechanism that we've put forward is that Iran is so intent on obtaining a nuclear weapon that no inspection regime and no verification mechanism would be sufficient because they'd find some way to get around it because they're untrustworthy.
But Obama said he has yet to hear any viable alternatives from the critics of this deal.
What you're really saying is that you've got to apply military force to guarantee that they don't have a nuclear program. And if somebody wants to make that debate, whether it's the Republican leadership or Prime Minister Netanyahu or the Israeli ambassador or others, they're free to make it, but it's not persuasive.
Another question from skeptics is this: will the Iranian government take advantage of loosened international economic sanctions to fund terrorist groups like Hezbollah in Lebanon and pro-Assad militias in Syria? Obama said nuclear negotiations with Iran were never aimed at solving all these problems, but he insisted they will remain serious issues.
Having resolved the nuclear issue, we will be in a stronger position to work with Israel, work with the Gulf countries, work with our other partners, work with the Europeans to bring additional pressure to bear on Iran around those issues that remain of concern.
Obama said he welcomes a robust debate, but he's also threatened to use the veto to prevent the agreement from being derailed by Congress. For The World, I'm Matthew Bell.
Plenty of people in the Middle East are skeptical of the deal, and not just in Israel. There are a lot of concerns about how it will affect the balance of power in the region. One of them, the skeptics, that is Faisal al-Istrabadi. He's a former diplomat who represented Iraq at the UN, and he's on the line from WFIU in Bloomington, Indiana, where he directs the Indiana University Center for the Study of the Middle East.
As an Iraqi, in general, my view is that a warming of relations between Iraq and Iran could be a bad thing from the narrow parochial perspective of being an Iraqi, because it suggests the possibility of confirming Iraq as being a part of the Iranian sphere of influence. But more broadly, a lowering of the tensions between Iran and the United States, a lowering of the tensions generally in the Middle East, is good. A deal struck to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear power is good. So on the whole, as a Middle Easterner and as a citizen of the United States as well, I would say lowering the tensions in the Middle East is better than raising them.
Some, of course, like Saudi Arabia and Israel, would say that this has done exactly the opposite. It has ratcheted up the tension and created more of a Sunni-Shia divide, with, you know, Israel aligning with the Sunnis.
Yeah, well, it's a very odd state of affairs. I admit that there is obviously a warming of what had, at least at an official level, been very thawed relations, very deep freeze relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. I think the Saudis are apoplectic at the possible rapprochement between the United States and Iran. You'll recall, of course, that Iran and the United States were allies before the 1979 revolution in Iran. And I think that Saudi Arabia is apoplectic about the possibility of a return to those days, exactly at a time when it is involved in a geopolitical struggle, a regional geopolitical struggle with Iran. And I have to say, Saudi Arabia has decided that Iran is a bigger threat in the region than even ISIL, because it has taken on the Houthis in Yemen, which it claims are sort of protégés of Iran, which isn't actually true. They do receive some support from Iran, but their complaints are wholly centered on abuse and mistreatment at the hands of successive Yemeni governments. But yes, I mean, I think that Saudi Arabia has a policy of confronting Iran. Iran itself has also a policy of confronting Saudi Arabia. And I think the Saudis are very much afraid that this is the first step in a rapprochement with the United States. There's an argument to be made that what the Americans and the Iranians are doing now is a kind of a new Sykes-Picot, in which certain parts of the Middle East, Baghdad at least, and point south, parts of Syria, are sort of conceded as being a part of the Iranian sphere of influence, and other parts of the Middle East are not part of the sort of American or Saudi or whatever sphere of influence. So it's possible that that's happening, and that the Saudis are reacting to at least a fear that that may be what's happening or may be what's coming.
Wow, that's a big deal. Is a deal like this a way to contain Iran, to make sure they're not supporting dictators and terrorism, or is it a way to give them a free hand?
I don't think it is a way to constrain them. The fact of the matter is that that will free up capital and space, in a sense, for Iran to continue its unfortunate conduct in the region. But the question, it seems to me, is do we want an Iran that is undertaking these acts to have a nuclear weapon or not? And I think the answer to that is the latter. My view is nobody in the Middle East should have any weapons of mass destruction. But the option here, I don't think, is can we have an Iran that is sort of more docile or less interested in projecting its interests? It's clearly in a mode of doing so, and it's in Iraq. It's in Afghanistan to a certain extent. It's in the Gulf. It's in Syria. And it's in Lebanon, of course. Let's not forget Hezbollah. But the option isn't do we get a scaled-back Iran. It's do we have an Iran doing these things with or without a nuclear weapon. And the without sounds like a better idea.
Faisal al-Istrabadi directs the Indiana University Center for the Study of the Middle East. He joined us from Bloomington. Thank you, sir.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.